In this year's Fringe Festival, a show called Things We've Always Wanted to Tell You sees director Scotty and his friends invite you to a dinner party. But that invitation comes at a cost. You're asked to sit down, shut up, and overhear the conversations of five proud working class Irish folk. Scotty is with me in studio to tell me more about Things We've Always Wanted to Tell You. And one of the cast members is here as well, Felicia, who will tell us her story, I'm sure, as we're going along. So what is, or what was it that you wanted to tell us that we weren't hearing to? And who are the us here and who are the them, I suppose?
Well,
and
sure
us
you,
and you.
I'm sure you could join the dots for yourself. I guess us, we're talking about the working class and then we're talking about the middle class. And sure, you'll know for yourself that a lot of folk will always say, oh, sure, we're all the same. There isn't a class system here. And that was the first conversation that I had with Ruth McGowan, who's the artistic director of Dublin Fringe Festival, how we were kind of perplexed by this idea that there wasn't a class system in Ireland. And if you ask, you know, me, a child of the diaspora, or if you ask the working class kids from the flats or from the, like any other not outside of the middle class of Ireland, they'll tell you it really does exist. And so that was the starting point for a lot of conversations behind closed doors. And we started in January, all gathering in a room and just having the chats that we wanted to have about them and what we wanted to let them know. And the show makes up a verbatim reenactment of those conversations.
But once we start with a basis of us and them, isn't that divisive from the outset? Is that a good idea?
It's a great place to start drama. And it's a great place to start with the truth, because there is an us and them. There is a divide. There is a divide between the haves and the have-nots. There's a divide between the people who acknowledge their privilege and who don't. There's a divide between people who are walking around with their eyes open and people who have got their eyes closed.
And do you think within the, maybe as you put it there, those who acknowledge their privilege, do you think within that particular cohort of the them of this equation that perhaps even this show is a way of saying, well, look, you're acknowledging that we're different, so let me tell you who I am and how I am so that you know what I think about myself. Is that part of it?
I think it's coming from a place of rage. I don't think it's that
nice. It's not that nice.
No, I think when you grow up, Paul, we grow up in precariousness. When you are forced to become an adult way before your time, and that was an upbringing of my own, you are filled with this sense of injustice when you realise that other people have had it easier, that the beds that other people were born in meant that they were able to live less traumatic lives. Now, I'm not saying that stuff doesn't happen to folk with money. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't happen to folk who have access to education and privileges. But what we are saying is we can stack it up and say to you, because of poverty, because of the beds that we were born in, because of displacement, because of social housing, because of the way that the world is structured and capitalism, like, it is hard, and you're left with a lot of stuff that you don't know what to deal with.
So are you hoping that, in fact, you're going to confront a lot of people in the audience? You're going to have them squirming in their seats, looking at something that they think, oh, God, I hadn't realised that somebody else had to live in a situation like this. I just wasn't aware of it.
No, I think it's less aggressive than that. I think it's a list of questions that we have which are unanswered. Like, we don't know how to answer these questions, because we're not social scientists, right? We're not elected leaders. We're not folk that have the capacity to be able to deconstruct these systems. And I think something that Felicia does in the show is leave an audience with a whole bunch of questions that they have to sit and process. And we're not saying you're to blame. If you're sat in that room and feeling yourself as the victim, then you've got some work to do.
Yeah.
If you're sat in the room listening to the question that we're asking you, then perhaps you might be on board with us.
Yeah, and it's not that you're looking for answers, you simply want to pose questions, is that it?
Of course, and yeah. I think that for me is where the activism is. That's where good work sits. You know, I was here in February with a show called Fat Blokes, and I was talking to you then about like that show is a bunch of questions and provocations to an audience. If I was to come in, sit you down for an hour and say, this is what I think, this is what you've got to think, now leave, then sure, there's no democracy to that, is there?
Well, you brought Felicia in with you and you say that she has a story, and quite obviously, Felicia, I want to know what that story is. What is the story that you want to tell us? I know you're going to do it throughout the play, but give me a sense of some aspects of it.
I suppose my story is quite multi-layered, like most people's stories. But this current story is actually about my realization of my position in the class system. And through these conversations that we had with Scotty and all the other cast members, I think I stumbled on the surprise that I was working class. It's kind of like the difference between knowing something with language versus knowing something more with your body and with your emotions and connecting that with your experiences. So I actually had a moment where I actually broke down. I was like, whoa, I'm working class. And my reality has always been a norm until I left that norm in order to explore and realize that there is more words to attach to that.
When you say that there was almost a moment of discovery,
yeah,
I'm working class. How did you define yourself in some way previous to that moment of realization?
No, not at all. I defined myself as a person that had my experiences, and I usually would say them as a matter of fact.
And what were those experiences that were matter of fact?
Somebody that grew up in Longford as a migrant, as an immigrant, and so I nearly didn't give myself a role or a position within the class system because I'd already been given one as a migrant. And I think it's weird when you realize that you cross many positions in the society, not just as a migrant, you're also considered working class. When your identity begins to morph and unfold and have more solidity, so I moved in sense as I grew from just being a migrant to, oh, I'm also Irish. Oh, I'm also, because I'm Irish and a migrant, I'm working class. So those were the discoveries I made.
And you had spent time in direct provision.
Yes.
How did you define yourself at that point? Did you think of yourself as part of Irish society at all?
I was a child in direct provision, so I didn't have language to validate those experiences. Actually, rather, I blocked out a lot of my experiences in direct provision as a child. I didn't spend more than a year in direct provision, but I went to several. After settling in Longford, Longford became, okay, this is home. So everything else prior to that stopped being part of my existence until you grow up and you give that language. And so that's basically what happened to me.
You're going to do a section from the play for us, which gives us part of your story, and in some ways part of your mother's story, really,
yeah.
is what you're giving us in this section. Will you perform that for us now?
Yes, absolutely. Between the ages of 8 to 10, Mom did peke. And what peke was, you know, the lady in bars and clubs with chewing gum and perfume. That was my mom. And she did that like every night, and I remember she would come home with a bag of coins, and depending on the size of the bag, I would know if Mom made some money. She used to get so happy some nights coming home with €100, and I knew we were eating for 2 weeks. I knew we were eating her sleepless, like the day itself wouldn't have its own way and beg for more. I knew. I knew we were spoon scooping every copper into cornflakes and bread. I knew. And so when I heard the night come home with her, often leaning my chin out of the window between broken blinds just before sunrise, holding her dress in the veins of streetlights, Mama made music with her slipper slaps. She hurried home, coins jingling. I knew the melody money could make mattered. I knew. I also knew she preferred me and my innocence wrapped under the covers, tone deaf and well-fed. Nowadays, her rhythm has slowed down to a hard-working whistle. I'm trying to pick up the pace. I've never learned to slap my slippers to the jingle of a coin bag or ever heard that melody ever again. But recently, for her birthday, I took her aboard a plane with me, and I didn't care how many beats it took to pay the ticket man. Just that, I finally noticed that the sun lives in Mama's smile and all the music stopped to hear her breathe her thank yous.
And that's Felicia there performing from Things We've Always Wanted to Tell You, one of the shows at this year's Dublin Fringe Festival. Felicia is with me in studio along with the director of the piece, Scotty. I have to pick up on one of the words that's at the very beginning of that piece, mm-hmm. Felicia, because there is no other word for it. You were telling peke. Mam did peke. What? Now, you go on to explain what it is, mm-hmm. but tell us where the word comes from.
So the word is a Yoruba word, or I suppose a Nigerian word that my mom gave to the experience. And it seemed that all the other moms that did similar jobs, or dads actually, called it that. And it was like a secret code or a word that they used for this job they did during the night. It was like an undercover kind of a word. And as you know, in English, that we have no word to describe this activity. So that's where the word came from.
Pekka, and this was this something that your mom and all the other people, were these people in direct provision who were doing this kind of, in inverted commas, secret work?
When my mom was doing this job, I was already living in Longford, and it was her way of sustaining our livelihood and keeping us on track and making extra money.
And was it necessarily about all of these people, were they working as bathroom attendants or toilet attendants, or might it go across a variety of different types of jobs?
Yeah, definitely a variety. I just knew that my mom and a few other moms did it, and it wasn't an abnormal extra sort of work to do.
Scotty, you were saying that the last time you were in with us, you were talking to us about the Fat Boy play, and you were performing in that.
I was.
You're not performing this time, and you tell me there's a story there, because I'm sure you have plenty of stories to tell, and I can hear the rage in you even at the beginning of our chat tonight.
It's polite rage, though. It's comfortable rage, yes. And it's rage that we channel to have conversations with each other that we tend not to have. I don't perform in this piece. It's quite symbolic. There's an empty seat at the table in the show, which is for the diaspora, because the diaspora is made up of the working classes that had to migrate, who had to leave to find. And there was a sense, I think, particularly in my family, that when you left, that you went up in the world, and actually you didn't. Your social standing followed you. And actually, nine times out of ten, it became worse. I grew up in the eighth most deprived ward in England, and that was largely an Irish diaspora area. So we have an empty seat at the table to acknowledge their voice isn't on the island, their voice isn't here, but that we acknowledge that they are part of the Irish working class.
So obviously Felicia is giving us a story here that has certainly its roots in a direct provision story. Your own story, which is the empty seat, is this diaspora story. What other kind of stories are we getting?
So we've pulled together a whole bunch of really great people who can talk. We don't say it's the definitive guide to the working class of Ireland.
And these are not the only five types or anything.
Do you know
like
what I mean?
Yeah.
But we do say, like, this is a flavour, this is a sense. So we have people in their 20s, 30s and 40s. We have people who identify as gay, people who are brought up with just their mother at home, people who are brought up in the country, people who are brought up in a city. So we try to vary the stories and the experience, because the experience of the working class isn't just the inner city, north side, from the flats. Like, there is a breadth of the Irish working class, and we really wanted to try and encapsulate as many of those stories that you can, but with the limited people that are on stage. So it's a very exciting piece of work, because for me, I don't know if Felicia feels this as well, but it's one of the first times I've been in a rehearsal room where the commissioner who's commissioned the piece is working class, the director, the assistant director is working class, the set designer is working class, all of the artists are working class. Mm. Usually when you work in the arts, you're surrounded by people from privilege who went to the right school, whose parents could either get them into the room, or that they were given the education that allows them to be in the room. Have you found that, Felicia?
Yeah. I think the interesting part was finding similarities from myself and these people that don't even look anything like me or don't have the same stories as I do, but we find a meeting point or a center where we can both exhale around the same subject and be like, I see you and you see me. So that's probably the most exciting part of the process for me.
All right, that's Felicia and Scotty speaking to us about Things We've Always Wanted to Tell You. Scotty and Friends Limited premiere that new show at the Project Arts Centre from September the 18th through until the 21st as part of the 25th Dublin Fringe Festival. And you can find out full details on fringefest.com.